About a vindictive sort of a thing if we extend these statute of limitations.
Representative Burton.
Let me try that, to answer that. The difficulty might be the age at which you're fixing as a minor. Is it 18 or is it 12, this sort of thing. And if you're, and that's always a question in my mind, is culpability and that sort of thing. But I think that what we're saying in this, and the question of inherent secrecy, is that often a person who is subjected to this type of activity, if you would, really may not be aware of what the effect is on them until later. We had testimony to that effect. It is left, I believe, to the courts to make a determination whether there was in fact abuse. That is what we're saying. But we're saying that that charge at least can be brought up at a later date, because there may not be any indication to the person at the time, or there may be a fear, the control of either a family member or non-family member of the individual, to the point that there is actually a fear, or they're afraid to come in with some sort of charge until they get out of that situation to let them bring it in. So the issue for you may be this time of this age of 18, rather than it is the issue, the ability for a person to ask for charges to be filed. Is that it, or is it you concerned that anybody should not be able to file a charge in the first place?
No, I guess.
Representative Bellamy.
I guess I'm fully sympathetic to the bill when we're talking about younger people. But we're talking about if a victim were under 18. And when people get to be about 16, 17, 18, they may be a child in the eyes of the law, but in many instances they're not a child in terms of some of these acts that are going to be performed. And I just see by extending, and I'm not saying I'm not going to vote for these amendments, I'm trying to totally understand, particularly the second set of amendments, I'm trying to understand that we are doing some things that public policy wise we're beginning to see the negative effects. A vindictive person just has that much more time to make charges. Once these charges are made, generally speaking, whether there's guilt or not guilt, in the eyes of the public, you're guilty. We're dealing with this now in the sex abuse situation and divorce, joint custody. And I guess that's where my concern comes up.
Do you want to ask?
Although, may I, Mr. Chair?
Representative Bellman.
There are a couple of differences. I just want to point up some of the differences, because I think I can understand where you have this kind of tied in with that, Representative Bellamy. But first, this contemplates that there's going to be a criminal charge, and the burden of proof is there to protect the potential victim of someone who's merely being vindictive. I think it's really important to address your other point too, and I just, within the realms of control, I don't think that the rationale that someone has enjoyed being the victim of one of these particular crimes, which might in some adult context be viewed by some people as enjoyable, is a reason to take these out of the bill or off the books. That's something that's been used to justify victimizing people. Think about it. I understand what your concern is about vindictiveness, but I think there's a real good public policy rationale here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Phillips.
Has this bill, the motion been made on this bill?
Yes.
I call the question.
Okay. Question's been called for. Any objection? Okay. Main question is on the bill. As amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, clerk will call the roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Passed for a while.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Nellman?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Bringer?
Representative Bellamy?
I vote aye.
Votes aye. Representative Springer votes aye. Motion's adopted. We'll ask Representative Kopetsky if he'd like to carry the bill as the prime sponsor. Okay, the next bill is 2437.
I opened up my file and I had it in House Bill 2439. This has not been my best day.
Okay.
I'd like to read.
Chairman, 2437
comes to you with a grant of amendments and a letter from the Federal Justice Council. House Bill 2437 would, in its original form, assign responsibility for felons from the to the state. It is responsibility of the state to incarcerate all A, B, and C felons. There was, this is an issue that most people seem to like, but the reality of the matter is that if we were to assume that responsibility today, the fiscal impact would probably not allow us to do it under the immediate circumstances. However, there is a feeling by the committee and from people who testified on this that we wanted to move on the issue, and the proposal became amended under House Bill, I believe the amendment is HB 2437-2. What this amendment does, in effect, is it adopts the responsibility of incarceration of felons and establishes that as a state policy. And that's, you find that statement in Section 1. It's hereby declared in the policy of the state of Oregon that to the extent practicable, the state shall be responsible for the incarceration of persons convicted and so on. And it secondly then directs the governor to study the state policy and to set forth, as set forth, and to present a report to the 1989 Legislative Assembly on how that policy would be implemented and the cost to the Corrections Division, which will become hopefully the Corrections Department, and allowing the governor to delegate that to an appropriate task force or state agency to bring that method back. What we really want to do with this is adopt this policy so that we can begin, as I say, to move on the issue and find out the best way it ought to be implemented, because we have some idea of the cost. I think in Multnomah County alone, it would be about $5 million a year. There is a letter that came in from the Criminal Justice Council, I believe everybody has a copy of, and the council suggestion is that it's logical to make this a part of the Criminal Justice Council's study of sentencing guidelines and presentation to the 1989 legislature. Mr. Chairman, let me move House Bill 2437 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Burton has moved House Bill 2437 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Burton.
Yeah, the it's specifically in the bill, it directs the governor to make that report back to the legislature. It doesn't specifically set it out as to what task force or agency is there. Should do that. We left that to the management decision of the Executive Department and the Governor. The Criminal Justice Council is recommending that this be taken up as part of their process for securing, when they look at sentencing guidelines and bring it back to us. We have yet to have that bill in front of us, but my assumption is that that's what they will be doing, either felonies and misdemeanors or both. The other point that's made here, and I think it's a good point to consider, and the executive director of the council has pointed out that in order to begin to conform to the 89-91 state budgets, in other words, this comes back in the 89 budget, the implementation for that would have to begin during 1988. It's my sense that the 89 session will have to examine whether this is a feasible option, and we probably wouldn't be able to do any funding until the 91 session anyway. But I think it's a point well made, and also that the council is available to be a part of the study of that, and I think that matter ought to be going to the record when we, if this bill goes on up to the governor.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Burton. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, does
Representative Bellamy.
The bill as amended, does it have a fiscal impact?
Representative Bellamy, I don't, if I could, Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that it would, because the logic, if logic ever prevails in this process that we're in, tells me that the governor would assign that to an existing funded organization that would have the ability to study this task without any further cost to the state.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Bellamy.
Is this the new jail overcrowding committee for the next 2 years?
You're talking about the governor's commission or task force on corrections. I'm not certain whether they would take this matter up or the Criminal Justice Council would, but it could be either one. They both would have to work in concert. In any case, the members of the task force, except for one, don't get paid anyway. So.
Representative Hamlin.
Just a comment. As the chair of one of the subs on this committee, I read the regrets of the executive director of the Criminal Justice Council, but I have to express my frustration, I'm sure, on behalf of those of us that are trying to get matters done, to receive proposed amendments on the day of the full committee hearing is somewhat frustrating, especially when they are not in proposed legislative council form to either be thumbs up or thumbs down.
Okay, is there further discussion on the motion? Representative Burton.
Mr. Chairman, I missed that, but the amendments were adopted in subcommittee. The amendments are 2437-2. Representative Hammond, maybe that's not. I'm sorry.
He was speaking to the perhaps changes suggested in the letter from the CJC. Not the action taken by subcommittee. Representative Bauman?
I just want to, this may not even be the appropriate time. The staff measure analysis refers to many of those who are convicted of A and B felonies. And my understanding is this is A, B, and C felonies. And I would just ask council to correct the analysis so that it doesn't, or correct my assumption, one or the other.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to that. It may be my fault. I think I've run around for the last year and a half saying AB felon bill, and in fact it's ABCs. It is all felons, and Mr. Taylor may have been picking up my language, but I think that I think the statement there that he's making in the beginning is perhaps correct, because the Cs would fall in the category the way that's stated, but I think the point that Representative Bauman is making about signal that goes to the rest of the legislature.
From testimony that we heard on the bill in Portland, 2/3 of these people are Cs. So it's a substantial omission.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I was under the impression that the A and B felonies were being sent to the county jail as opposed to state institution, and that the C felons were supposed to go to the county jail anyways.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the law, if I'm correct, says that a felony is anyone that can be sentenced to a year and a day in the county, in a prison, and then or jail. And that might be a C felon as well, and that's where the confusion comes in, I think, is the question is, why is the comma in there, and or jail, and we want to take the word jail out. So it just clarifies that and says it's the state's responsibility. Any felon must become the responsibility of the state. Now, that certainly doesn't mean that there may not be a cooperative arrangement with local jails to house prisoners, but the state would then have to pick up the fiscal responsibility and the management responsibility aspects of that in an agreement with the county. And I don't know that we actually discussed that in detail in the committee. I think we moved this rather rapidly because everybody thought it was a great bill. just too bad we don't have the money to do it right now. Washington County even liked it.
As a matter of fact, they did.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be helpful perhaps for purposes of clarification. Sea felons, there are many categories of sea felonies which can be treated as misdemeanors for purposes of sentencing. Also, it has been the purpose of the Community Corrections Act basically to deal with the sea felony category. And depending on from county to county, that has been enjoyed varying degrees of success. I think that the policy statement was intended, and it so states that all felons, people who have been sentenced as felons, should be the responsibility of the state. And to the extent that clarification is necessary or correction to the staff measure analysis, that certainly can be accomplished before the bill is reported to the floor.
Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Denham?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Burton, would you like to carry that one?
Yes.
Okay, Representative Burton, I recognize that you've got a time constraint and are due in Portland momentarily. Would you prefer to carry over 2557 or?
Mr. Chairman, I think probably. If we can do that, I'd like to carry that over, Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay. Representative Burton, unfortunately, has a commitment that's going to take him away before we deal with 2557. And I believe our next full committee hearing is scheduled for Thursday. And we'll just carry it over to Thursday to the agenda in order that he can participate and leave the discussion without placing his next commitment at jeopardy. We're going to appreciate dedicate or cut ribbons or?
Well, actually, I get yes.
Okay, in that effect. And the highest traditions of something. Okay, Representative Burton should be shown as excused. I believe that completes the work on our the area relating to Subcommittee 2 work. Representative Burton should be shown as the carrier on 2437. Representative Kopetsky, again, should be shown as a carrier on 2474. Let's go ahead and take up, shall we call our other counsel to begin with the balance of our agenda? Mr. Taylor?
Okay.
Ms. Weber, available at this time?
This doesn't restrict the probation.
No.
Okay, Ms. Weber, we're ready to proceed with House Bill 2721. That measure has to do with an increase in the amount of fees paid for preparation of transcripts by official court reporters. That came to the full committee with a unanimous support from the subcommittee on a 5-0 vote approximately 12 days ago. I believe it was noted in subcommittee that it's been approximately 7 or 8 years since the page increase was, page reimbursement has been increased, and there was a lot of testimony in committee that, in fact, the trend of inflation, materials, other expenses borne by court reporters and those folks who prepare these transcripts has justified the increase. This measure does have a fiscal impact, and it's anticipated, assuming our successful consideration of it today, that it would be sent down to the Ways and Means Committee.
Would you like a motion, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Phillips.
I'd like to move this bill
2721
with due pass recommendation.
Hey, Representative Phillips has moved House Bill 2721 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and with the understanding that it would be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there further discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
What sort of people would request a transcript from the circuit court, particularly for indigent defense? Why does anyone request a transcript?
It's necessary when an appeal is taken from a decision made in circuit court to the Court of Appeals. Generally, all a part of the transcript must be provided as part of the record. And the same is true in civil proceedings. All or part of the record would be designated by the parties as part of the... It's going to depend on the precise nature of the error that's claimed in terms of how much of the record is necessary, but I believe that's generally the context and the need.
27 times.
Is this... Are most of these transcripts ever looked at?
Well, we have a judge from the Court of Appeals here. I'm sure that he would tell you that the court seriously considers every matter that's presented to it on the record.
I realize that, but are the transcripts themselves read and used?
I can't speak to that issue, Representative Bellamy.
Go ahead with the vote on the bill.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll on the motion on the bill to the floor with subsequent referral to Ways and Means do pass.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Canlin?
Aye.
Miller?
No. Oh.
Phillips?
Aye.
Freer?
Aye. Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Just kind of a side issue on that. I'm just wondering if on that, you know, we keep talking about indigent defense doesn't have to do directly with the bill, but would we find a lot of the transcripts in the criminal cases are requested but are never really looked at much?
I couldn't really speak or respond to that, Representative Bellamy, to be honest. For your information, there has been an informal group working on the issue of indigent defense, and you may recall that during one of our first orientation hearings, it was the Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals who suggested to us that he felt that in Oregon maybe there were more than really appropriate opportunities for a criminal defendant to get into an appellate proceeding. When we asked him whether or not he could make specific suggestions at that time, he was unable to do so. I understand that he has been asked to re-examine that issue and may be coming forth with certain recommendations which may address the concern that you've expressed about the cost of appeals as it relates to indigents or criminal defendants. So we are hopeful that the certainly no one has a greater interest in reducing the workload of the Court of Appeals than the Chief Judge, and I'm sure if there are any reasonable options available, he's not going to hesitate to share them with us. Okay, the next bill is a couple retirement bills, 3053 and 3054. Counsel,
not maybe. Judge retirements again.
Okay, judicial retirement bills.
Is that a retirement? Yeah,
Sub 1 recommended a do pass with no amendments on 3053. It has a prior referral to Ways and Means. Fiscal impact is $797,902 from the general fund from 1987 through 89 and $833,800 for 1989-1991.
Mr. Chair, would you like a motion?
Yes, I believe those came unanimously from the subcommittee. Is that correct, counsel?
Yes.
Okay, Representative Phillips?
Move House Bill 3053 to the floor with a due pass, knowing it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, Representative Phillips moves House Bill 3053 to the floor, due pass, with a referral to Ways and Means. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
It says provides the function that provides non-judge members of PERS to opt into PERS as judge members.
Where are you at?
I'm on the staff measure analysis. What? I thought we already allowed for non-judge members to opt in.
Counsel?
I believe, are you talking about the bill we passed a couple weeks ago? Because that was a district court judge bill.
Well, I thought that we had a policy several years ago that we, or maybe a session ago, in which we allowed non-judge members to join and make a decision. I guess I would ask me to have a background, or a little bit of background on what are we doing here?
Are we speaking to 3053, Representative Bellman?
Yeah.
And the language again?
I believe so. Well, now, I do need to ask them. In line 17, it says, a judge who has more than 16 years of service, who is eligible to elect to become a judge member of this subsection, but did not so elect, may elect to become. Now, I guess I need to know why, if a judge decided once they didn't want to do it, why are we turning around now and saying, well, I'm sorry, I changed my mind. It appears to me that's what's doing. Page 1 of the bill, line 17-18.
Yeah.
Representative Hanlon.
If I recall correctly, Representative Bellamy, this bill deals with the fact that there's a certain class of judges that receive no retirement credit between their 16th and 27th year of service. And that at the time the prior election was made that you speak of, and some judges didn't opt in, that since that time there has been a major change in the PERS laws, which make the election a whole new decision. If I recall the testimony that we had, if you elected back then, it would be a different decision than if you were given that election today. I think that's the reason Sub 1 moved forward with it.
Representative Bellamy, as I recall, when we last dealt with the judicial retirement package, and I forget if that was 83 or 85, we sent the bill down to Ways and Means, and Ways and Means ran out of money to fully fund the judicial retirement package. And unfortunately, whether this was an entirely conscious and knowing decision by Ways and Means or not, they created a trap. And basically the judges, at that time, they had a limited period of time in which to elect. They were given a choice that if they elected, they were going to be penalized and they were not going to get credit for 11 years of service, basically. So a judge in that situation had a catch-22 dilemma. They could choose, quote, to become a member under the reworking of the retirement system, right, in which we took the judicial retirement system and basically junked it and melted them all into PERS under a special category. But those judges who were looking at having to eat the gap there, an unfunded portion for their service, quite wisely chose, hey, I'm not going to do that. What we've done now is we're recommending, or we're telling Ways and Means, listen, we feel it's only fair to go back, fully fund that retirement package, allow those judges who chose not to participate because they would have been financially penalized for doing so, allow them now for a 6-month period of time to make that decision with the understanding that they would be funded and not suffer financially. I apologize for maybe taking more time than necessary to explain that, but that's a little bit of the history, and it's kind of difficult to track even when you've been dealing with it for 3 or 4 sessions as I have, and I'm sorry that maybe the analysis is not quite as clear in terms of that background or history, but that's kind of where we're coming from. We set the judges up in an impossible situation, and this tries to rectify that in terms of, and the way to do that, you have to first, Ways and Means will have to agree with us that they want to rectify it. And then in order to implement it, you have to reopen the door so the judges can re-exercise based upon the Ways and Means decision to fund if that's what they decide to do.
Mr. Chair, one final question.
Sure.
Do I assume that the years between 16 and 28 years of service were all in Oregon?
Yes. otherwise you wouldn't have a contributing Oregon employer. And I'm not aware of any factual situation that was presented to us which suggested otherwise in terms of any judges now sitting or anyone potentially who would be affected by this. And I'm getting an affirmative nod from one of the judges who certainly is in a better position than I to respond. Thank you, Judge. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanlon.
But I agree with Representative Bellamy, or at least I think I do, that the wording in the function and purpose in the staff measure analysis is confusing when it says non-judge members.
Unless one's very familiar with that terminology, it would confuse just about anyone. We will, and I'm sure counsel, taking the direction from our conversation, will rewrite that to make sure that even our colleagues who may not have had the background or opportunity to work with this issue that we have, hopefully will be in a better position to understand it. And so, further discussion? I believe we do have Representative Phillips' motion do pass to the floor, subsequent referral to Ways and Means. If there's no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Representative Hanlon.
There's a prior Ways and Means attached to this.
Yes.
Does that mean it goes straight to Ways and Means without going to the floor?
Yes.
Okay. Just so I understood that.
When by prior reference, there's no need for any action or floor adoption of the committee report if it's been referred by prior reference, and that's the situation here. Okay. Any further questions? Discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Dillon?
Aye.
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.